Good afternoon.
Oh, I'm glad we both did it.
Yes. I don't like how in sync you two are right now. This is very...
Our periods are lined up.
Oh my god, that is the most homoerotic I've ever seen of you two. Just fucking leading
Wait a minute. That was the most homoerotic?
Fair point. I've seen you two make out in the past.
Counter-argument, that was homoerotic?
That was a better counter.
By homoerotic, I mean you two conspiring against me. This coup that's happening
right now.
That
turns you on?
Yeah, I spent like 10 minutes working on the audio levels, and the two of them just lead in really, really close, disturbing your mics. That's slightly worse than banging the table. You should, oh, no. All right.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't bang the table.
Don't bang the table. Hey, guys. Hey.
How you doing?
What's up? How y'all?
Ceiling, rafters, insulation.
That's fantastic.
That all depends on your perspective of up.
Ah.
Well, no, up is up.
Is it?
Yes.
Mm, what about down?
That's down.
It's where aborted fetuses go.
Oh.
They go down and,
straight
and
to
Uncle
hell?
Pete goes up.
Straight up, does he?
R.I.P.
No, because it's a sin.
See, I'm wondering that. Do you think he's in hell?
Yes.
Good point. Horace and Pete, we're doing two episodes. We'll get there in a minute. First, I got a bone to pick.
A bone.
I don't want you mother.
Which bone? The humerus?
Femur.
The anvil.
I don't want you... Monkey mouth motherfuckers.
What? If he picked the anvil, that'd be cool.
Sitting the hammer again.
Yes.
What?
What?
What are you talking about?
I ain't bad, but I ain't stressing. Two friends, one question.
Now you lost us.
Oh. Nick.
Me.
I'm going to air some grievances. You ready? We haven't done an airing of grievances in a long time.
Because it's not Festivus.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not the right time of year.
We're halfway to Festivus. It's a halfway to Festivus party.
This is not halfway to Festivus.
It's pretty close.
It's close.
I can air grievances all year long, especially with you two as my friends.
Hey, who said we were friends?
Got you there.
Nick?
Yes, sir?
I'm here for you, okay? I think we need to – we're going to all get together. I'm here. We'll talk this out. We're going to get better.
For the record, I'm on Nick's side.
You'll be with me in a second. I'm here for you. You have a Facebook sharing problem. And we need to talk it through.
No, again, I'm on Nick's side.
You have a problem.
I think he shares the perfect amount because he
no,
always
Zach,
runs
you
funny
do.
Shit.
Zach, it's your boy.
What up?
You're not being my boy right now, but no, you are my boy, and I want to help you through this. Are you aware that there's a like button?
Yeah, I don't use that.
Okay, there's two distinct
did
buttons.
Did you know I actually don't use that?
No, I got that. That's why I realized after a while.
So what's the problem?
I wonder why Nick is not or why Nick shares things so much, because I don't think you like things. I think you only share things.
Yes.
So the way of showing the person that you like their post is by sharing it to the world.
Yes.
Can you not? Can you please not?
You're the first complaint I've got. I'll tell you something. On a near daily basis, I have one or two people approach me or message me on Facebook and tell me how much they love my posts.
No, I love it. Because he always posts either something funny or something that's actually really cool.
And I've genuinely had people come up to me and just say, like, your posts make my day. And, you know, and Nico, you have to understand, this is not something I chose to do. This is a commitment that has been dropped on me.
He didn't.
When someone comes up to you and says,
he didn't choose the share life.
Yeah.
The share life chose him.
When they say, your posts make my day. Well, if I stop now, I mean...
What's the point?
Wouldn't that ruin their day? I can't do that with a good conscience.
Okay, so you're doing God's work is what you're saying.
I hope to.
Here's all I'm telling you, bro. And I enjoy the good Nick share every once in a while. Oftentimes, I'm the beneficiary of the Nick share. My posts are often shared, and the 1,000 or so friends that you have on Facebook...
That can change, by the way.
Are
yeah, just stop sharing his stuff.
...are subjected to my podcast. Listen, all I know is I spent 2 fucking hours yesterday going through musicalist vocal only tracks of rock songs.
Aren't they
but weren't they amazing?
It's killing me. Of course they were amazing.
I then, when I saw he was doing it, I then went to that page
and
looked through them
so
all.
So did I. It's destroying my life. It's not okay.
And I'm still happy he's doing it. Thank you, Nick.
See, the thing is,
you are a god amongst men.
When I go on Facebook, the thing is, I every, like, time I go on and start sharing things, they're always, like, in a theme, and I get these random kicks.
Yeah.
And so, like, one day you'll get, like, 500 shares are all one thing, and the next day you get another 500 or something else.
You shared, like, fucking 500 cooking videos this morning. I was watching, like, people's...
Did you?
This morning I was
didn't,
only
I didn't,
doing...
I didn't look this morning.
Yeah, me and Michaela were just watching cooking videos.
It was
solely.
Exclusively... I was just watching slices of things. I just continuously just watch, here, we're gonna slice cucumber, we're gonna slice a banana. And I just saw in these, like, evenly little, like, circles and squares, like, oh my god, all this slicing, it's so even, and I was hypnotized by it. I was sucked in by the shapes. I'm like, I can't stop watching people cut food. Stop! It's destroying my life. I want you to stop for me. I want you to use your shares sparingly.
Nico, are you aware that there's an unfollow button on Facebook?
No, I will not unfollow. I can't unfollow. I have to continue to subject myself to it, but it's not okay. It's like the girl
okay,
in
now
Morrison
see, here's,
today.
Here's the only bad thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, never mind. I found him.
What?
It took me a while, but I got there. Let's see.
Oh, you found
easy froyo cake.
Found ooh, the cooking ooh, videos.
That sounds good.
Look at all the slicing.
Fruit and wine sorbet. So grand sangria sorbet.
Yes.
Ooh, that sounds good.
How many are
except
there?
They barely use any wine.
Yeah, how much wine are they use?
It's pretty disappointing. I'm not sure how loud I'm supposed to talk with the mic anymore.
You can talk as loud
only
as you
only a
please.
Cup of wine?
Yeah, it's not a lot
that's,
of wine.
That's not a lot of wine.
Not a lot of wine.
Like, at all.
How many cooking videos are on the feed this morning?
Oh, hold on. You actually want me to count? Okay.
Count them.
Probably 20.
Okay, let's see.
I'll watch them all in a row.
1, 2, 3, 4. That sounds good.
Oh,
the loaded
God.
Barbecue chicken nachos.
Oh, you're yeah. feeding
oh my
into
God.
This disease.
What was that?
This
four,
is supposed to be an intervention.
5, 6, 7.
Oh, my God.
8.
This is not okay.
9.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's 10.
A that's a good one.
What, the tacos or the passion fruit?
I don't care. I wasn't looking.
10, 11. No, that's a folding board.
That's all right.
It'll come that's back. 11.
There you go.
Oh
12.
God.
It's the Beatles.
The Beatles?
So 11.
Yeah, 11. Okay.
11 cooking videos.
And a folding shirt.
It's like I'm watching the Food Network this morning on my
oh
Facebook
feed. Oh my god,
they're feed.
So, they look so good though. I don't need to go on BuzzFeed anymore. I just follow you.
You're
yeah,
like,
that's fine. It's like, that's my goal. My goal is to make people not need
that's
Facebook.
What I'm saying. It's like I have Reddit. You've invented like your own micro Reddit right now.
I know.
There's already one Reddit. I don't need another one.
Literally, all of these are just BuzzFeed videos.
It's
that's all right.
That were posted on another Facebook page that you found.
It's like giving the kid with Tourette's the remote control. It's like one day I'm watching Food Network. The next day.
Oh, it's a flan.
I'm watching acoustic VH1. The next day I'm watching some fucked up late night adult cartoon. It's different every day. It's not okay, Nick. I need more consistency in my Facebook feed. I can't take it anymore, Nick. Every other post, oh, Nick Mario Brandon, if you never use your real last name, Nick Mario Brandon decided to post fucking instructional on how to give a prostate exam. Every day!
I didn't see the dat boy in the pajamas.
This is not okay!
Look at the Emmy thing award.
Oh, no,
bottom.
I saw it, yeah. Oh, shit. Boy. What up?
That's great.
Oh my god.
Yeah, no, once in a while, man, you just get into one of these like dang.
Once in a while!
Well, no, once in a while I get into these dank
you've
moods.
Been visited by Dat Boy.
Yeah. when I get in a dank mood, that's when you know it's dangerous.
Dank mood, is that what
that's
it is?
That's dangerous.
Is that the mood? Is that the.
Oh, that's when you start seeing all the crazy shit and you're like, this isn't even. How did people come up with this? And I'll go on a tangent for.
No, I love your Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. I get a lot of compliments.
I could spend hours just trolling through his Facebook.
Exactly my point.
Well, you have to understand.
That is
and
the
everything,
problem.
Everything I share, I want you to understand, for the most part, the bulk of what I share comes from, like, 3 sources.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
no.
It.
Yeah, no.
It's great.
I told you, like, I watched 50 fucking
it's
vocal
like,
only, vocal isolated
but they're
videos
amazing.
They're amazing. Of course they're amazing. That's the problem.
There's this kid.
Do not, he is enabling
you might know,
us.
You might know him. He's younger, actually, so he's still in high school. This kid, Sean O'Brien.
No idea.
Do you know him?
No.
He goes to Plainville High. He is the majority of my dank meme stash.
Not George?
What?
Not
he's
George?
No, George? I don't even see George's posts.
He's your dank
does
meme dealer?
Does George actually post anymore?
I don't no. think so. He's my dank meme dealer.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And then best of Tumblr is most of the other funny shit.
Best of I Tumblr,
that
yeah.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I love the shit Jeff Fargo posts, but I don't usually share that. I just like I just
are those
like
those weird-ass
yeah.
videos?
No. They're usually just statuses that he just
who
writes.
Gave you the videos?
Which videos?
Be vocally the, isolated?
No, the ones where it's like looks like it's from a 1980s PSA. that you find hysterical.
That's probably Sean O'Brien. I'm trying to think. It's probably him.
Man. I don't know, man. Listen, more power to you.
Oh, wait. No. You are right. That is Jeff.
Is that Jeff?
I know what you're talking about now. Yes, those are Jeff. I should share those on Facebook. I don't share those on Facebook. I should.
No, you shouldn't. Those are bad.
Oh, I should.
They're offensive memes too half the time. Yeah, it's like 9/11. Bush did it. It's an inside job.
That's not what we're talking about.
Jeff Fuel can't melt steel beams.
No. We're talking about like these things that literally aren't funny, and they're funny.
But Nick finds them absolutely hysterical.
Anti-jokes? Is that
what no, kids anti-jokes are funny. These days?
Like, it was just like a video of like these people talking, and he says like, oh, did you watch the football game? And then the lady turns, she goes, I don't like football. And that's the video.
That's the video.
That's it.
and he laughs hysterically at them, and I don't get them. I don't get it. It's not funny.
The audience likes it. The audience appreciates it. That's great. I can see, yes, there's sometimes comedy in the mundane. Every once in a while, just watching an anticlimactic, just pointless scene.
But I have like 9 of them saved. They're just like all great.
Wait, you're rewatching them? It's like your porn stash?
Once in a while.
Oh my gosh.
Who saves porn?
Yeah, I don't get that.
Slowly backs away. I've been told that I talk too much about masturbation habits.
You do.
So, you know what? I'm not going to talk about it.
No, seriously. You save porn?
No. But I revisit.
Well, that's different.
Is that bad?
No, I just think it's strange to like be like, ooh, better save this for later. And then you like download.
You bookmark? Well, you add it to your reading list?
Have you ever bookmarked?
Porn?
Yeah. No?
I don't think I have.
I've probably bookmarked it once.
I'll tell you what.
I bookmarked like 4chan pages.
Oh no, what's worse?
I've probably bookmarked. Uh-oh. Shut up. Oh, that was a good save.
I know.
That was the fastest I've ever seen you get up.
Well, we didn't see him get up to chase after the ice cream truck.
Oh, that's true.
Why are you bookmarking 4chan pages is what I want to know. That could be worse than bookmarking porn.
Well, no, because they have like the you laugh, you lose posts that are hysterical.
Mm, they also have space dicks.
They do have space dicks.
Mm, I remember.
Wait, no, that's Reddit.
What's a space
dick? No, space dicks is Reddit.
Sorry.
What is that?
All I know is you showed me that page one night and I will never be the same.
I showed it to you?
Yeah, and you went at it on
my
phone.
It's the one where the astronauts are being dicks to each other.
I don't think that's what it is.
Well, then there's two different types of space dicks that people know about.
Yeah.
Because I know about it's like an entire page of two astronauts who are dicks to each other, and they play like really awful things.
Ah, is that what it is, Zach?
I think Zach is making an elaborate lie.
Are you lying? No. Wait, are you telling the truth?
Yeah.
What, you're just watching scenes of Apollo 13 over and over again? That what space dicks is all
about?
Wait,
what space dicks?
He doesn't know.
I don't actually remember. So you're the only one who knows right now.
What?
You're the only one who knows what space dicks is.
Space dicks is the disturbing, fucked up images that should not be published anywhere that somehow get onto Reddit.
Oh.
Of like chopped off dicks and nails being hammered into people's testicles and shit of that nature.
I've seen things like that. That's not really.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen like BME painel and yeah, shit like that. But
same. That's just gross. But
oh, you didn't know what space. You showed it to me.
Yeah, I don't remember it.
You pulled it up on my phone, and it was like in my history. I was like browsing through.
That sounds like something I did.
Like mutilated and aborted fetuses and gross things like that.
Like when you brought up the breastfeeding videos for no fucking reason.
That was funny. That was funny. No, because yeah, that's the only time you see boobs on YouTube, and it's like cool. YouTube's like, yeah, sure.
Oh, man. All right. Let's steer the ship off of this. let's go the opposite direction. We watched two Horace and Pete's today.
Dose.
A draining hour of television. Just emotionally draining hour, in my opinion. And I'm curious, just on a macro level, what'd you guys, your emotional takeaways after watching both episodes?
Where the same as whenever I watch anything. okay, that happened.
Yeah, that cold pit in the depths of your heart is just spinning at the same speed.
I'll tell you one thing. A lot of death.
Yeah.
A lot of it. In both episodes, really. You know, there was the trying to get laid and that lady,
Oh, wow. There was a lot of death.
Yeah, yeah. And then
too much death.
Too much death.
Too much death. Uncle P, unfortunately, we'll just announce it. He passed away.
Yeah, I think they know that. Breaking news.
Do they? They know that?
I mean, yeah.
Do our fans...
If they're listening.
Do our fans avidly watch what we talk about?
They should.
Do you think they do, though?
We also said it.
Of course not.
I'm convinced they don't. I'm convinced. Well, you're right. I guess we did.
But, we said it, like, at the beginning of this.
Formally, I felt like we owed it to him to formally announce.
Rest in peace.
See, now, why are you whispering?
Because I said I'm not sure how loud I'm supposed to talk.
You can talk in normal volume. I adjusted it. It's
yeah,
good.
But I'm confused. Like,
it's like fine. What is the normal volume?
Yeah, I don't even know. Like,
talk. Just speak.
All right. So, yeah, a lot
speak,
of
boy. Speak.
Roof.
Timmy fell down the well?
No, he's fine.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
I thought you were going to keep going.
No, if no one's in the well, I don't
yes,
care.
Yes, and?
Okay, what happened? So Uncle Pete died. Uncle Pete died. Sylvia has cancer, as we know. Mm-hmm. She's looking worse.
Yeah.
Looking worse. You know, good.
Oh,
good job in the makeup department.
I don't like Sylvia.
Yes, good job in the horse and Pete makeup department. Really picking up the slack for all the shitty production value everywhere else. Yeah, but the big story, of course, is Uncle Pete.
Right, and it's so you asked our emotional feelings about this, these two episodes. It was somewhat depressing, obviously. I mean, death, not a happy topic. However, I do want to say, compared to most of the episodes thus far, the ending of episode 5, fairly uplifting.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which is
well, I think that was the point.
Yeah, and that's why they ended it where they did. They ended it end of act 1.
Yeah, so essentially... I assume that they're referring to the first 5 episodes.
Yes, none of they were. Yes.
Yeah.
So, halfway done. And, I mean, you know, end on a high note.
Sure.
After all that
death. Fairly high note.
It ended on a point of optimism, and it was... I will say that these episodes, I don't think they're my favorite of the bunch. I still think episode 3 is probably my most favorite.
Which one was 3 again?
Was
That was the last one we watched.
The one with just the two of them in a room talking.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But it felt like the most TV like, and by that I mean it felt like we're finally getting into the groove of this show, and we're starting to.
It's moving,
but they're treating it like a sitcom, and in the traditional sense, which is the first couple episodes were setting a lot of the groundwork, and it seemed like we were moving towards an end goal, and these sort of felt like, especially episode 4. This is just a bunch of characters hanging out in a bar.
Yeah.
It's the reason why people watch Cheers, people watch Seinfeld, people watch Friends. It's just these are a bunch of characters that you know and understand, and now they're going to go on a bunch of side tangents, and they're going to have weird conversations in this place, and it could go on for years and years and years. Obviously, the show will not go on for years and years and years, but it felt like Louis finally figured out what show he was making, and he went for it. Now, knowing Louis, he's never... comfortable with that, and he's never okay just saying I'm gonna make a traditional sitcom, I'm gonna fucking throw that all out the window, and he kills off one of the most lovable characters on the show, or at least one of the most interesting characters on the show, and now we're in conflict again.
Now I was reading an article, and apparently Louis C.K. and Alan Alda got into a conflict, and they didn't agree on the way the show was going.
Is that true?
Yeah, so they ended up firing Alan Alda, and that's why they killed him off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Contract negotiations, yeah. Huh? It's a bitch. Alan Alda, a real diva to work with.
He's real diva.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, obviously, I'm not being honest.
Yeah.
But Zach's eyeing me.
Zach
like,
believed it.
For a second.
Well, no, for like half a second, I'm like, oh, wait, no, that was good.
You have to realize, Zach, that this show is not worth arguing what direction it's going for anyone involved.
Well, no, it just still shocks me how good of a bullshitter you are.
Really?
Yeah.
Or how dumb you are. It's
either way.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, Alan Alda, I don't think he was too, you know, he was making $500. He he wanted to make $700. That's all it was.
Yeah.
The entire run of the show. Couple interesting things that I want to point out. I listened to a podcast that I sent both of you that you probably both didn't listen to.
Keep forgetting to listen to it.
And you should listen to it.
I didn't forget.
I'll listen to it tomorrow.
It's an interview Louis C.K. did with Bill Simmons, and it's really, really good. And he talks about how sort of his idea for the show and what it's all about, and he sort of touched on it. He didn't really get into specifics. Alan Alda, supposed to not have been in the show, and the role of Uncle Pete was written
– Right. You mentioned this.
For Joe Pesci. That was the original guy that Louis C.K. had in mind. And I'm kind of glad they didn't go with Joe Pesci, as much as I love him.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been right for the role.
Yeah.
We did discuss this outside. Yeah.
Pesci is would be good if Uncle Pete got into a fight with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, sure. If he constantly, like, fought with people.
Like, fist fought? You talking about?
Yeah. Like, got into altercations with people. Yeah, sure.
Smashed a bottle over his head.
Exactly. Stabbed Joe Pesci into it.
Stabbed him with his mother's knife a couple times in the trunk of a car.
But I think Alan Alda's sort
funny?
Of...
Do I abuse you?
Kind of funny.
What do you mean funny?
It's a good movie.
Like
love
clown?
That movie.
Like a clown?
That's good. But, that's good. No, that's just... I mean, it was written with sort of this... insult-based attacks instead of physical,
mm-hmm.
which Joe Pesci is even the fact... How old is Pesci?
I don't know. He hasn't made a movie in so
106.
Long. 106. Could be.
Okay, so a 106-year-old man.
Older than the bar.
Yeah, exactly. But no, someone who's known for playing like this tough guy, you know, Casino, Goodfellas, all these movies... And then you bring in Alan Alda, who's...
73.
Is he 73?
Wow, Joe Pesci. 73 years old? God damn it.
I believe it.
I'm not all right that with that. Sense. I'm not okay with that. The man, well, yeah, okay, keep going.
How old is DeVito?
A lot older than he has no age.
I'll tell you, he's a lot older
yeah, than he Yeah, I know he does.
He's also a creature of the swamp.
Yeah, he is.
He is the bog
71.
Man. Yes.
Oh, wow.
He's very old.
71, yeah.
God.
And he's still doing all his crazy shit.
Well, yeah.
He's crazy.
Yeah, I think Pesci would have brought too much shtick to the role, I think. And he would have just played loud, obnoxious Italian.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Alan Alda brought a lot more humanity to the role. And by his very nature, he is a likable person. He's always been a very likable TV character actor, a comforting presence. Someone that you wanted in your TV shows, wanted to spend time with. So for all the horrible racist... sexist things that he was saying, you felt akin to him because it's like I want to be around this guy, as horrible as the things that he was saying.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they got Alan Alda, and Louis even said that on the podcast, essentially, yeah, I mean, we wanted Pesci, but we ended up stumbling into a more iconic, better comedic actor, so it worked out okay. But I'm really, really sad he's gone. Should we talk about his death? Should we just jump right into that?
I still don't know what to make of it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have any thoughts.
Describe what happened.
Well, I mean, he went – well, first, I guess, he was talking with his son.
Sure. Slash nephew.
His snephew.
Snephew's not bad.
Spell nephew.
You know what's better? Bush nephew.
Bush nephew?
Yeah, Bush nephew.
You like that one?
Yeah.
No, I like snephew.
Yeah, snephew.
Snephew.
His snephew about – how licking pussy isn't love. I'm just repeating. Licking pussy isn't love. Love yeah. is when you hold a woman close and you look her in the eye and then you come in her while she comes.
Yeah.
That's love, I guess.
It's almost an exact quote.
Yeah, I mean, close something enough. Like that. And he said it's rare. And he said, don't forget that. And then he grabs a gun and he goes, I'm going to go do a late night deposit. And then he leaves.
And by that, I mean deposit a bullet in my brain, I guess.
I yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So that entire string of events, I don't know what to make of that.
Zach, what say you?
I'm just stating the facts.
Well, I think it was when we were talking about – when they were rather talking about the stuff they were talking about earlier in the episode between, you know, Horse? Yeah. I can't remember fucking Louis C.K.'s character's name right now. That horse needs to get laid and all these things and the talk at the bars, the conversations and whatnot. I think it's sort of dawned on Uncle Pete that this isn't the world he knew anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized he's not happy in it, so he should stop being in it. Type of that's what I took from it.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, I think if he had waited, if he had kept living, I guess.
He had not shot himself in the face. He had not
committed to violent suicide.
Yes.
The conflict with trying to sell the bar wouldn't have been resolved the way it is, which I think ultimately is the, sort of the best way that they're going about this.
Right.
That was revealed in the second episode.
It's just like, I'm holding them back. They're moving past me. Right.
I also think
I'm due.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it had something to do with as well. I mean, they mentioned loneliness and I don't think, I mean, I think we all agree he wasn't lonely in the traditional sense of, like, he didn't seem like a type who needed a woman and who, you know, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think he was lonely in that type of sense. But I'm thinking back, since you brought this up, I started thinking about it just now. And he did, no. He did mention several times to Horace, basically saying, like, you're not your father. I think he misses his father.
For sure.
Right? I think that might be more, you know what I mean?
And I think it also sort of realized that.
Now, his father or the old Horace, his brother? Who do you think he misses? Because I took that as, like, I miss my brother. I miss my comrade.
Yeah.
You said his father. I thought you
meant he misses Horace's father.
Yeah. It's like, I'm at it alone right now. I've lost my partner. No one is sharing this experience with me. No one's got my back anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because in those episodes, they kept. Whenever they mentioned loneliness, they kind of implied, like, loneliness as in, like, a lack of a sexual partner. But, I mean, for him, I don't think that's the case, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I think, definitely missed having the old Horace around. And I think that's part of, you know, my time is due. Horace isn't here. Maybe I shouldn't be here.
Well, and I think it's sort of like that. But it's more like Uncle Pete saw how Horace and Pete are with each other. And... Okay. Uncle Pete realized he doesn't have anyone like that anymore. I mean, Marsha only is there to get drunk and leave. You know, everyone else at the bar fights and argues with him and each other, and he doesn't have somebody to help him.
Right.
And I think it was not too much, but he just didn't want to live that way anymore. He didn't want to live without some sort of support system behind him.
What a way to go out, though. What a conversation to go out on. And just leave it to fucking Louis. Here he is again, subverting expectations at every corner.
You know, I gotta say, Louis, I think, is underrated in the sense that he is a master of dialogue.
Oh, my God, for sure.
Super underrated.
For sure. I'll just say this. I made this realization, I think, just now. I have thought that Horace and Pete was a really good show, and I've been a fan of it, and I've enjoyed talking about it on this podcast. Dude, this is a great show. This is a really, really great show that we're going to be talking about for years. I think, honestly, it's going to get a second life on Netflix somewhere or on Amazon, Hulu. Some network's going to pick it up. It's going to be in syndication, and we're going to be watching it and sharing it and talking about it. Like, really, this is incredible writing. What he is doing in this show, it is daring. It's bold. It's fucking – it's hilarious.
You think he's going to win that award? Yeah. What did he – what award did he send it in
the
for?
Emmys?
Was it an Emmy?
Yeah.
I was wondering if it was an Emmy or if it was something else.
I hope.
I think he has a decent shot.
Problem is he submitted for drama and not as miniseries, and I'm not sure why he did that. But
because he's ballsy.
Yeah. So he's so he's up against Game of Thrones, Better Call Saul, House of Cards, Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, but they all have their turn.
Stiff, like, competition.
There's only one season of Horace and Pete. Like, let it go.
Fair point. I hope
just
so.
Just give it to him, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Not based on merit, just go.
I'll
just
say this. Another contender I really think deserves an Emmy, I fucking think Alda should be nominated. I really think he deserves a Best Supporting Actor nomination for this. I thought he was great. And I don't know if he's won in the past. He might have won. I think he won for West Wing a couple years ago, but he was great on.
I'm just gonna look it up.
But yeah, he deserves another one. I thought for really only three episodes, he had one line in the third one. Made the most of his screen time. But back to that last scene, it's like fucking Louis will just not let a touching moment be a touching moment, and he won't just, you know, go through the motions of how characters die on shows and how certain emotional beats tend to happen.
Were you looking for an Emmy?
Yeah. He's won probably a bunch of stuff.
Primetime Emmy winner, outstanding writing in a comedy.
Oh, he wrote?
For a comedy, variety or music series for MASH.
Oh, okay.
Best lead actor in a comedy series for MASH.
Did he win?
Actor of the year series, MASH.
Oh, wow.
Outstanding supporting actor in a drama series, West Wing.
Did he win, or was he just?
Yeah, no, he won.
Okay.
Wow.
Good. He deserves another one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Put it in his treasure trove of shit. No, just
yeah, he's one of
back
shit.
Up the dump truck. Just dump Emmys on his lawn. The guy's an icon.
And if Louis wins an Emmy.
No, he's well. First of all, he's won. Yeah. By the way, he's
oh really? For Louis?
Yeah, for Louis, he's won a couple writing.
I'm surprised because yeah. he doesn't strike you as that kind of.
He is.
He strikes me as like he's just as shocked as everyone else to win, but he doesn't like keep them displayed.
Yeah,
I feel like he puts them in a box in the corner of the basement.
It's weird,
probably. All right, here we go. Yeah. Just...
And if it brings up, he goes, oh, yeah, I won an Emmy.
No, he's why? Probably like, I don't even want to fucking look at it. He's like, it makes me sick.
It's weird because, like, I want to imagine Louis as this, like, Hollywood outsider that, like, he doesn't do things the way everybody else does and he confuses people. But then he's, like, the biggest superstar comedian in the world right now and all of these people want to work with him. It's like fucking he got Alan Alda to work for, like, a Coke and $20. Like, that's... That's it. You know, Jessica Lange is taking time off of American Horror Story to work. Edie Falco, like Buscemi, Steve Buscemi is working on the show.
You know, he's just as surprised that they're coming to work with
That's
him.
The thing. I don't know what it is.
He was on Fallon the other night. I told you about this.
Yeah.
And I watched part of the interview. I didn't watch it all. And he said that going to like the Emmys and everything, he was at the AMC table.
Mm-hmm.
So he was with everyone from American Horror Story and all that.
FX, but okay.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. I meant FX.
Yeah, I think he said the same thing on the Simmons podcast, too. But
oh, did he?
Yeah, keep going.
Yes, well, so he goes, he said he goes to, he first went to Edie Falco and said, hey, you know, I'm writing this thing. It's top secret. I wrote a part just for you. Can you do it? And she said, yeah. And then he goes, and then I look over and there's Jessica Lange. And I walk up to her and I say, hey, I'm writing this thing. It's top secret. I wrote a part just for you. Can you do it? And then he goes, and I'm pretty sure Edie Falco was just like, is he just fucking going on to everyone to say?
Just making sure that person have a word on the page.
Exactly. But he literally wrote Marsha with Jessica Lange in mind.
Yeah.
For Marsha. He wrote Sylvie with Edie Falco in mind for Sylvie.
Makes perfect sense, too.
Yeah.
Those all make sense.
And I think that leads to how great of a thing this came out to be.
Yeah.
Is he knows what they can do. He knows how Jessica Lange acts and does all these things, so he can sort of write in a way where she's more comfortable doing it as opposed to going outside of her, trying to stretch.
That's the goal. When you're doing something like that, you want as much control over the project, so.
But also exactly. Understanding the strengths and weaknesses of your actors.
Yeah.
And knowing what they bring and being a historian in terms of what they've done and, you know, would this person fit in right for the role and everything. And I think Buscemi, he wrote for Buscemi too because he came on board really early.
He wrote Buscemi.
The thing he said about Jessica Lange is essentially when Louis was young, he had like a giant crush on her. And like,
cause King Kong, right?
Yeah, King Kong, like, she's a Hollywood Scarlet, and like,
oh, well, no, he talked about her being in King Kong.
Yeah,
wait, King Kong, she, the original,
she,
like,
well, no, not the, remake, the 70s. The
first remake.
She was the girl in King Kong. Yeah, oh. She was in Tootsie. She was hot back in the day too.
Really? Yeah, she was
a looker.
Yeah, she was.
Really?
Yeah,
I mean, she's pretty now.
Yeah, well,
really.
You know, time's taking its toll. But
Google
doesn't it
all. Go.
Yeah, look. But essentially, like, yeah, as a comedian, he's like. Like, Hollywood Scarlets love comedians because no one makes them laugh, and they just want to laugh. So they would always sit next to each other at award things, and just after a while, they developed this friendship.
Yeah.
Because she was hot, and Louis wanted to be next to her, and she wanted to laugh. So
she
would sit next to Louis. Yeah, so working like that. Where was I going with this? But yeah, somehow they stumbled into Alan Alda, and it was great, and I'm really sad that he's gone, and it really did get to me.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, she was a looker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was really hot back in the day.
What happened? I'm just kidding.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
You're only kidding a little bit, though.
You're not kidding.
Yeah.
Comedy is tragedy.
I mean, she's not, like, plus ugly, but, like, she looks different. What did you say?
You don't even know what you're quoting.
What did you just say, Zach?
You don't even know what you're quoting, what and I'm going to tell you what you're quoting, and you're going to find it hilarious. Do you know who came up with that line?
Who?
Woody Allen wrote a movie called Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Oh, no, I know, I knew that.
Have you watched Crimes and Misdemeanors?
No, but I knew that. I knew.
Do you know who says the line in Crimes and Misdemeanors?
No, but I knew it was in a Woody Allen movie.
Mm. You know who is?
Who?
Alan fucking Alda.
Was it really?
Yes, it was.
Wait. What was the line?
There's the comedy is tragedy plus time. Alan Alda plays this douchey comedy director that is always talking about his theories for comedy and how comedy bends. It doesn't break. It bends. You gotta bend. My dad and I quote this to each other all the time. Alan Alda, great in that movie, Crimes and Misdemeanors. What a coincidence.
Wow. Anyway. Coinky dink.
Yeah. Again, the iconic Alan Alda. Oh, yes. Oh, sad he's dead now, even though he's not really dead.
He's fine. Dead
yeah, now. We would like to point out Alan Alda isn't dead.
Yes. That's... all right, let us... Here, we got some specifics here. Ready? Episode 4. Abortions.
Right.
Hit me.
Okay.
All right.
You can't say things like that, Nico.
I think it's going back to everything we've said before, right? Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to the that idea of like tradition versus change, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very conservative view.
Sure.
And I think, you know, the two arguments were just, you know,
well, even
examples of
well
that.
No, even in the argument between the different generations,
they had weird arguments.
They did have weird arguments, but in between the different generations, there was things that the older generation didn't believe.
Right.
So even take the two oldest generations that were present at the time. So you had Uncle Pete and Buscemi's Pete. Okay. Uncle Pete was saying how if a woman were to get an abortion, they would both go to hell because it's because it's a sin and it's murder and the baby's not baptized and blah 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 blah. Even then, Buscemi, who I think we can agree he's older than the people at the bar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was saying how, you know, well, they don't go straight to hell, you know, they go to, well, they used to go to limbo. And then all these things, and...
And then the church said, no more limbo.
Yeah, and then the younger generations are arguing with Pete, and then Uncle Pete is arguing with Pete because of a small fact that one person believes and has sort of grown up believing, and the other hasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had strange stances. It wasn't your traditional abortion argument.
Well, yeah, because I think these are the thoughts going through Louis C.K.'s mind.
Right.
Yeah, I think this is what he's thinking. And, you know,
he just jotted all down and said, like, oh, Uncle Pete would say this.
You know, I was thinking about it while watching the scene. I'm tempted to say that it's, like, that the writing, I don't want to use the word lazy, but it's certainly, like, hedging its bets. In the sense that, you know, it's not taking a side and it's not making a point. It's just presenting the question and letting you fill in the answers. And part of me was like, you know, fuck you, Louis. Why don't you fucking take a side? Enough of this fucking straddling in the middle shit. But then I thought about it some more and I'm like, that is a much, much harder stance to take when you're writing these shows. It's like too...
Yeah, cool, because it's almost easy to pick a side and argue it. It's hard to argue both so they come out equally valid.
Because I'm sure Louis has an opinion on abortion.
Yeah,
I'm sure Louis is...
No, I disagree. Oh, I think Louis really? Is the type who's unsure about everything. I don't think he has a hard stance on a single fucking thing. Because you know what? Louis is the type who will sit there and he'll fucking scream and complain about something on stage. And then he'll go back and he'll be like, I'm an asshole. Everything I said is wrong.
Yeah, that could be.
You know what I mean?
That's true. Well, yeah,
he does that whole thing yeah, like, sure, of course, but maybe. Yeah, I don't think he has a hard fucking stance on anything.
You think it's all just in the middle for him?
And yeah,
just
what he's I think he's. Believing? I think Louis is the most ambiguous and lethargic human being.
Could be.
Good word.
Thank you.
It's a good word, yeah.
thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank
not
you.
The word of the day.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, sit up.
All right, sit up. Thank you.
Fucking sit. Sick of this shit.
No, yeah. I think he's very, I don't think he gives a shit.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. Is that,
I think every time he finds himself leaning to one side, he goes, wait, but yeah. What about this?
But maybe.
Yeah, I think he's in a never-ending struggle.
That's interesting. So do you really think that he doesn't have an opinion on abortion?
No, I don't think he has. I think he understands both sides and says, I don't know. I think he's unsure.
Because, all right, maybe then it's a lot easier for him. But I could see myself, I just know in anything I do, whether I'm writing a paper or I'm doing a podcast or just talking with my friends, I have a very hard time separating my own opinion from anything.
Yes, you do.
It is always influencing everything I do. And, like, for this guy, at the top of his game, that can do whatever the fuck he wants to say, you know what, I'm not going to politicize it and I'm just not going to insert my own opinions. I'm going to let the audience decide. It's fucking ballsy. It's bold and it's ballsy, and I loved that scene. It was hilarious, and it was really, really good.
It was funny, and then of course Leon, of course Leon,
Leon, Leonidas.
If you watch the show, watch it for Alan Alda and Leon. Those are the two you really need to watch. That's it.
Yeah,
watch it. What? I don't know. It's the thing you're supposed to say when you say the thing you said. Like what?
Okay. All right, Leon.
I love Leon. I don't know where else are we going from here in terms of – we've talked Trump. We've talked abortion. Are we doing gay marriage next?
Might.
What are we doing?
Oh, you're talking about in the show.
Yeah, what else is on the docket?
Oh, I thought you were talking about on this podcast. I'm like, we didn't talk about Trump on this podcast.
Those people at the bar, they just like to hit all the topics, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess
– he talked about Syria, remember?
A couple times.
And why doesn't everybody in the world just commit suicide? And then he said, then Leon says,
but then what if all everyone commits suicide?
What if everybody in one day committed suicide, including babies? And then what was that guy's name? Tom?
Who
the fuck is Tom?
I don't know. And why is he in a bar drinking when he's clearly a very good musician?
I think he's a maestro.
I think he's a genie.
Ooh.
Did you see what he was wearing?
With just yeah.
I thought he was a genie.
He was wearing like a Tobin-esque thing.
He's like, Nico. Just... It's like you need to look for this. I know we're doing an audio podcast, but you need to visually see the joke I just made.
Sorry, I can barely hear. My vision's all out of whack. I'm just losing all my senses.
Good.
I'm slowly dying. It's
all the better.
Yeah.
Too bad you couldn't lose your voice first.
No, that's still well intact. I'm only hearing out of one ear. Just know, I think his opinion counts for more today, Zach, because I can hear him and I can barely hear you. Not that it's any different from most days, but it's
hey,
but ching.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, I'm listening to Charlie Brown over here a lot more.
Oh, good. Nice shirt,
I'm the teacher.
I need to point out, fucking Nick's got a shirt on right now.
I like that shirt.
I like your shirt, Zach.
Thank you. Don't you have this shirt?
I do. It's a nice shirt.
It's fucking squiggly. It's like you're on the cast of In Living Color in like the 90s. It's fucking
In Living Color was hilarious.
Should we post a picture of this shirt with the podcast tonight?
Sure. I gotta give you some bongos. You're gonna do some Moroccan dance or some shit. I don't know.
No,
it's catching me off guard every time I turn over there.
No, I like
it's
it.
Like, well, I just forgot about that. I'm reminded about that shirt.
Yeah. I like it. I wouldn't wear it, but I like it.
I wouldn't wear it either.
Do you want to tell the audience why you are wearing it?
Yeah, I bought this shirt a while back because I was at TJ Maxx with my girlfriend, and she goes, wow, this shirt is fucking ugly. And I said, okay, I'll buy it.
And then he did.
And she begged me not to wear it, and I wear it.
Nice. Good. Cool story, bro.
$7.
Cool story, bro. man, what was I talking about? Oh.
I think abortion.
Yeah. Chit-chatting, oh, and I just sort of got caught off guard.
Oh, okay.
What a tangent to go down. We were only talking about the most controversial issue of the last 100 years. Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
Man, the last 100 years, abortion is the most controversial.
Not like
segregation.
Not like killing Jews.
Fair point. The blue dress.
Mass genocide. Yeah. Blue dress.
The white and gold dress, you mean?
Oh, fuck.
There we go.
Zach. No, for the record, I only ever saw blue.
And... For the record, I only saw blue and gold.
Really?
What?
My cousin saw green. How do you see green?
What does that say about you?
I don't know.
Is he blue-green colorblind?
No.
Oh, okay.
He just saw green.
It's like he was actually looking at a picture of just green, the color green.
It was a totally different picture. It's just a green dress.
What was that dude's name? The maestro? Fucking
Tom.
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 Tom the maestro.
Tom the maestro. Yeah.
The genie.
Yeah.
The maestro genie. Genie maestro. Well, how would you list that on like a business card? What's, would you put Maestro Genie or Genie Maestro?
What's a more valuable skill?
Ooh, well, one is magic.
And then the other is being a genie.
See, I don't know
the maestro. Solid.
See, I don't know what a maestro is.
The fucking conductor writes music and shit.
Why don't they just call it a conductor? Why would we say maestro?
Because a conductor is the guy who leads the orchestra. The maestro is the person who writes it and conducts it.
Composer. He's also a composer. Some might call it a composer. Oh. Yeah. But yes, composer writes, conductor conducts, maestro does both.
Mm. Like, okay.
So I think by that process of elimination, I think my show goes first.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it's two things in one.
Good point.
A genie is three.
How?
Three wishes.
Okay, but it's one thing. He can grant wishes.
Three of them.
Okay, but a maestro can conduct anything.
You could wish to be a conductor, a writer, and a maestro.
So a maestro.
Got you there.
You wish for more wishes. Stupid.
Oh.
This dude says my favorite line of the whole show, I think, so far. And he goes, Leon goes, what if everybody killed themselves at the same time? Even babies. Could you imagine a baby killing himself? And Tom just pipes in and goes, I saw a baby kill himself once.
No explanation.
No further explanation.
I was dying.
Yeah, Nico's dying. Nick and I, like, this is like a serious conversation going on right now.
Oh my god, that
right
is
now.
The funniest fucking line I've ever heard in my life. That is so hilarious. How does a baby kill himself? With the umbilical cord?
Well,
instead of just wrapped.
Quite frankly, though, we saw a baby kill itself once, though.
We did?
Yes.
Well,
Antichrist.
Is
that?
Yes.
Was that a baby?
Yeah.
It was a toddler, I thought.
What's the difference between a toddler, an infant, and a baby?
I guess toddlers walk.
Toddlers toddle around.
They toddle. It's a toddler.
Fuck you, Nico.
Yeah, what? No, once you're walking, you're not a baby. What's
the difference between a baby and an infant?
Oh, an infant is like a newborn.
Yeah.
So when do you stop calling them infants?
When they look cute.
But babies never look cute.
Well, how dare you?
Infants don't look cute.
No.
Babies look cute.
Infants don't look
cute.
I've never
thought any baby infant I've ever seen was cute.
It's like that Seinfeld episode, you gotta see the baby. And it's the ugliest fucking baby.
See the baby.
And the baby horrifies them. They gotta throw up at the side of the baby.
Now, in true Seinfeld fashion, I imagine they never actually show the baby, right?
No, of course not.
They just show pictures and everyone reacts.
Yeah.
Why would they show the baby?
You gotta see the baby.
Because Seinfeld is just like such a low budget.
Yes, unlike Horace and Pete.
Piece of shit.
Yes, high production value.
Best produced show ever.
Yeah, let's talk about Asian hookers. How about that? Abortion to Asian
hookers. I don't think she was a hooker.
I think his plan was to call a random. I thought that was a phone book. I'm not
going to
lie.
It wasn't a phone book.
I
no, I thought it was, but then
I was under the impression he was just finding a random Asian name.
What?
Was
that lived close to the bar.
Yeah.
Said, hey, you want to fuck?
See, like, I was under the impression that Alan Alda was like, okay, we're going to find an Asian girl close to the bar and say, Horace needs to get laid.
And like, just assume that girl is easy.
Well, no, but didn't you hear me said, you've never slept with an Asian, what are they for?
Good point.
So I thought he was just under the impression that, like, Asians are just for that.
I think that notebook was Uncle Pete's version of a black book. So it's every easy girl he's ever known through conversation or seen walking out of.
Do you have a black book? I've never heard of this. Is this a real
you
thing?
Don't know what a black
book?
Yeah.
Keep a book of girls that are easy?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
So. Is that what that show, like, The Blacklist is?
It'd be a better show.
Are they related? Are they related?
It's not the black book, it's the bigger blacker book. That's the one that has all the albums.
I'm questioning this, but I've actually seen Blacklist.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
It's not a bad show.
Not
I heard
that.
They killed off the main character, spoiler alert.
Really?
Who, wait, James Spader?
No, the chick.
Oh.
Really?
As long as James Spader is living.
Yeah, he's the real show.
I mean, come on, it's James fucking Spader.
I mean, they also killed off Jon Snow to see how long that lasted. Mm. So
my dad and Patty watched them filming part of an episode of
You
Black
told
Black.
Us about that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool, even though that show sucks.
Hey, it's a great show.
No, it doesn't suck.
I like that show.
Oops, did I say that? Asian hookers, yeah. No, he calls an Asian hooker, but not a hooker, just a random Asian number.
Just some
Asian
person.
Which is 50
person.
Times more racist. And calls Horace prejudice for not fucking an Asian girl ever and says, what do you think they're for? Just a classic Uncle Pete moment. One of the last we're ever going to get with him. Besides the moment where he's talking about going down on a girl and how not good that is. So Horace, in his infinite depression, decides to call in a former fling. Good shot. Her name is Maggie. Comes over for a quick little afternoon delight booty session. Call. Yeah, booty call, whatever you want to call it.
Afternoon delight.
We're at 50. Boop. Yeah.
Afternoon delight.
Nice.
Yeah. And well, shit goes down cool. there. What happened in that scene?
They fucked.
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't.
I know.
Yeah, they didn't fuck.
They almost fucked.
They didn't
and
fuck.
Then Horace, quote, looked sad, and you know that's a turnoff. So.
Sure.
That is that a turnoff? I didn't know that.
Sadness a turnoff? I would say so. Maybe that's my problem.
No, we met Maggie. Yeah. And we find out she...
Recent widow.
Recent widow.
A month ago?
Something like, yeah, she said like a month or two ago, something like that. A
month ago?
Kind of bitchy.
I liked her.
I liked her.
She had sass.
I thought she was spunky.
Yeah, those are my words. Spunky.
Spunky.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you spunky.
Yeah.
Spunky Maggie.
But no, so she worked at the bar. Did you just do the...
That's scarily good.
Spunky Maggie.
That is a scarily accurate sound.
Do it again.
Alrighty.
Nico's getting titillated.
Are you in the Jungle Book sequel?
Yeah, can I be?
Or you need to go see the Jungle Book,
I know,
Nico.
I do.
It's a good movie.
When they do a Jungle Book porn
gorgeous
parody,
too.
I think
you think they haven't?
Good point.
Rule 34,
Nico. Any interracial.
Oh. Wow. That was good. I'll give you that.
What happened with Maggie? Hurry up.
So Maggie comes over. She brought bourbon. Mm. Made me really want some bourbon. Mm. And then she talked about how she met some guy. What? Anytime I see somebody drinking whiskey or whatever, I want some whiskey. Where was I going with this?
No, her husband of like a month died.
Oh, yeah.
Plane crash?
He was a pilot. So she goes, yeah, he went to Montreal and never came back. And Horace goes, plane crash?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, what? No.
It's not plane crash.
No, heart attack. And like, I think we all said, like, isn't that not a very valid question?
Of course. That's what you assume.
I would assume that.
Of course.
I would assume that.
He's a pilot.
How else
who
do
didn't
pilots
come back.
Die? It's a very frequent turnover. I mean, it happens.
It's the risk of taking the job.
Of course. It's like fucking coal mining. Don't do that shit.
Yeah.
So they were only married for a couple weeks, and she goes on to explain because Horace reacts by saying, oh man, you must be devastated. And she's like, no, I really didn't feel that devastated because I didn't know him all that well and we never got to know each other. He seemed perfect, but for all I know, he could have been an asshole. Here's my question about this scene, because it sort of ends and Horace is mad.
Why are you humming like that?
Because I'm understanding where he's going.
Is this an optimistic or pessimistic view on love? What is this scene telling you about love in general and the nature of love? I'll present both cases.
Do you want to take both, Nico?
I'll present two cases.
Nico, what does this scene?
I think love is. I think she's somewhat saying this is kind of a stretch because it's a very broad question. She was talking about obviously she.
You could. No.
Not that close.
No.
She fell in love very quickly, which I guess in essence allowed her to fall out of love really quickly, right? That's what she mentioned.
I guess so.
That's not specifically what she said,
well,
but
I think sort of the underlying idea behind it is you can fall in love with somebody, but you don't really know them. Like you can fall in love with someone and then get to know someone. And then get to, like, know who they are. Or you can get to know them and then fall in love with them. Love is love. You can't help that. And I think it's her way of sort of coping with the idea of maybe I wasn't really in love and blah, 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 blah. And it sort of just came out as, oh, yeah, I didn't know him. So why should I be sad about it?
I actually feel completely opposite from you because you said essentially that love is this unstoppable force and you cannot avoid it.
Yeah.
I think that this scene was implying that love is born out of time. And that love is not an intangible thing where it's like you have a connection with someone and it's your soulmate and you're going to be with that person for the rest of your life. It is, I simply didn't know him and we were married and we were crazy about each other, but we weren't in love yet. And the reason is love comes out of being around a person for a while and learning about them and growing closer. And that really there's no such thing as a soulmate. And in a way, is love an actual thing or is it just how... Is it just the way that we make the feelings that we have for people that we're with for a long time tangible? You know what I mean? It's just...
I do know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not really as legitimate. Or
saying
maybe
love isn't real. It's basically... You're saying love is just something that we made up
yeah.
to describe essentially just the simple fact... that when we spend a lot of time with someone, we grow a connection with them.
Yeah.
And love is just our way of saying, oh, that's what that connection is.
Mm-hmm. In other words, that guy could have been anybody. That guy, he was a Ken doll, as she called him, and he was perfect, but who knows? He could have been a total asshole.
I think you live with someone long enough, and yeah, you do grow.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You know? She knew nothing about him. She could have been – he could have been a wife beater, or she could have been Mr. Right. Who knows? But she wasn't sure yet because she wasn't with him long enough. And I think so often Hollywood and movies portray love, whether it's the love in first sight whole thing or it's just that these two people are meant to be with each other, just sort of not true.
Not only time, not only born out of time, but born out of timing.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
In the right place at the right time.
Right absolutely. Place, right time.
Yeah.
I think that makes a huge difference as well.
Yeah.
If you think about everything she was going through there and she just happened to be on a plane, happened to be going to the spot, happened to meet the pilot – this pilot happened to be late for the flight, you know what I mean? Like, all of this stuff worked out the way it worked out.
My dad and I have this conversation a lot about the nature of love. This is what my dad and I talk about at our random couple of hours that we just
Does he try to cope you with your loneliness?
No, but...
yes.
It's more I'm talking him through his own psyche.
It's a guided tour.
Yes. I'm helping him through 20 years of marriage is what I'm doing.
Interesting.
I'm getting through it. But he always says, and I think it's an interesting theory, that love is not an unstoppable force. Love is a decision. Love is not something that approaches you and bites you on the ass and carries you to the finish line. You carry it to the finish line. And when you're with someone that you really like, you decide to love them and you decide to care about them and you decide to commit to them.
I would 100% agree based on my experience.
Yes. And I always thought when he would say
pain in the ass.
Sure.
Sucks. It's horrible.
Yeah.
But I would always say to him, like, man, that's a really pessimistic way of looking at things. Like, oh, that's so gross. You decide. It's not, there's no such thing as a soulmate. There's no such thing as just that one person. And then I think about it, you know what? There's a reason why marriages fail. And there's a reason why divorces happen. It's because people think that everything's going to work itself out. And everything is just going to be okay. And everything is going to just be like this fairy tale ending. And we're just meant for each other and we're going to be together. But also, divorces happen in 50% of the times. And the ones that ultimately fight it out and the ones that stick it out to the end are the ones that have decided to make it work. And that it's not going to work out for them. They're going to make the very hard thing of marriage and love fit their lives, and they're going to force it into that hole. No pun intended.
Yeah.
So in a way, I thought this scene was kind of comforting in a weird way. Do you know what I mean? It's like that it's not all storybook, and she wasn't devastated. Her life will go on because she hasn't found the person yet, and that's okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Philosophical enough for you?
here's where I thought you were going with it at first.
Okay.
Now, does her interpretation of this death that she went through at all influence the way that Horace interprets his own feelings about Uncle Pete's death?
What do you mean?
So by her telling him this and saying, like, you know, like, yeah, this death happened, but you know what?
I'm okay.
I'm okay. Do you think that helped Horace with Uncle Pete's death? As much as Horace and Uncle Pete fight, you know, he obviously still cares about him. Because Horace cares about everybody.
Yeah.
That's his big fucking problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I don't know. I think the way Horace dealt with it is the way sort of... Because we've always sort of said that Horace is supposed to be the common man. He's supposed to be average. He could be anyone you walk past.
Yeah.
And I think the way he dealt with it is the way that sort of the average person would have dealt with it regardless. You know, he tried making a nice toast at the... Not the wake, not the funeral. What happens after the wake?
The bar.
Yeah, besides getting drunk, because that's what happens at funerals.
No, you have to wake in the
What's
funeral.
It called? Is it
There's a third thing?
Yeah, generally people go out.
It's not
and,
a reception.
I've been, skipping those. I've been playing hooky on those, I guess.
Well, it's really for the family.
No, oh no, they you have out. A reception after the funeral, not the wake. Normally you do wake well, the night before.
Well,
you...
no, I'm saying, but what is the third thing?
Reception.
Yeah.
Is it reception?
Yeah, that's about right.
Or like a dinner.
Dinner.
Some, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So.
McDonald's.
You know, he.
For my family.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, because of you.
Sure.
So I think.
I did get McDonald's at the last funeral I went to.
See?
Oh, sorry, continue.
What else would you have eaten?
Good point.
Exactly. So I think, you know, he tried making a nice toast sort of towards Horace. Sylvie sort of shoots him down, and then he's like, you know what? No, fuck it. This is what is said at wakes and funerals, so I'm gonna say it, and I mean it. And I think just sort of having everyone there, and even though there was a couple fights and yelling and slamming of doors and crying, not necessarily about death, but he sort of I think took all of that in and said, I'm going to deal with it the way I'm supposed to deal with it. And the way you're supposed to deal with it is calmly, normally, rationally. And I think sort of if you take the idea of how one should react in a situation like that, that's exactly how someone would react.
Mm-hmm. He's the caretaker. He's the he's the protector. He's the one guiding everyone through it. And,
yes.
You know, as in the traditional sense, the man in the family. And he's, you know, he's wearing those pants as awkwardly as they may be.
oh, yeah, we got to talk about that.
Talk about that right now. Talk about your theory about
right now. Louis okay, pants. Louis C.K. doesn't know how to wear pants.
Yeah.
I've been noticing this since the first episode.
I don't know if it's because of his gut. I don't know if he just
His torso just looks long.
If he has a long torso. I don't know if he just has no ass. But he doesn't know how to wear pants.
Pants don't fit him right.
He wears them kind of low. He does. They're tight. They look like too. They look like they're really tight.
You know who he looks like? I'm realizing right now.
What?
Maybe. When I say this, your mind's gonna be blown. He looks like Mr. Lancer from Danny Phantom, the English teacher, the bald one.
Why am I blanking on what he looks like?
Did you repost that meme on Facebook today? Oh, fuck you.
Because I remember who that character is now. I don't remember who that is.
I got it.
He's got a very big torso. Yeah, for sure. He's got a very big torso.
Oh!
Yeah. Yeah, that's
Oh, my God. Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
But just so I make sure.
He's got the same kind of torso.
Yeah,
he's the same sort of figure.
But no, they're low.
Yes.
They're...
But now, here's the thing now. I noticed this, too. They're low... But it also seems like they're riding up on his balls a little bit. When he's sitting down, there's not a lot. It's not like they're sagging and there's a lot of space underneath.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They're getting
tight.
That into it.
Well, no, I made note of it. I was staring at Louis' balls at the end of the last episode. There, I said it. It's tight. It's fitted. These are fitted pants.
Yeah, I don't know this is typical Louis or if this is supposed to be Horace. You know what I mean? Like, no, I'm being serious. Like, I don't know.
I'm thinking.
What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. I've seen Louis C.K. naked.
You have.
Question.
Does he have pictures of
mine? I got your answer.
when?
He was naked in a bathtub in my house. No, at the in a Louis episode at some point, episode or season 4 or something.
Like actually naked?
He was naked. I saw his ass. He showed his ass. Yeah. Oh, not his balls and shit. But no, his ass. Okay. And I'm trying to think of his naked torso. And
put that on a
t-shirt,
please. I'm trying to think of his naked
torso. It's my new punk rock band. It's naked torso. ye Yeah, I don't remember the torso, but I do remember a small ass. You know what? Yeah, he has a small ass. Yeah, Louis got a small ass.
All right.
For yeah, sure. He just, it's...
Confirmed.
Mm. Well, and the fact that, and then his shirt was tucked in, but kind of poofy, hanging out.
Yeah, he keeps doing it, man.
Like, it just, it...
He keeps doing it. I'm not sure if it's on purpose
or what. It made him look like a kid thinking he could dress himself.
It's great.
Oh, yeah, no, I wouldn't change it.
It's perfect for the show.
It pisses me off.
Yeah.
But I like it as a sort of character choice.
Small ass.
Yeah, it's a small ass.
Small ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that Ricky Gervais?
Yes. Ricky Gervais plays his doctor in the show. Oh,
so wait, you're telling me Ricky Gervais saw Louis C.K.'s balls?
That's correct.
That's wonderful.
Dear Ricky Gervais.
It was probably not the first time.
All right. Okay. I think we've covered that topic.
Yeah, I think so.
I do think I want to cover one more thing.
Go ahead.
One more big thing. And then I think we're running out of time, right?
I mean, it's a podcast. We can go for 5 hours, but whatever you want to do.
Well, we shouldn't.
Yeah, we're an hour six, so.
Yeah, we should probably wrap it up pretty soon.
Go
but,
for it.
But I do want to kind of cover up on that high note that it ended on, because I don't think we talked about that.
Oh, yeah, no, we didn't. Yeah.
So,
Well, should we touch on just really quickly, because we didn't really talk a lot about the second episode, but we find out after episode four when Uncle Pete leaves the bar with the gun and it sort of zooms in on the door and it's very dark and depressing and ominous, and I guess you guys caught it, I didn't, but it was sort of forecasting what was coming. Yeah. We immediately find out in the next episode that
picked a good two episodes.
Yeah, yeah. It was really it really was one unit. But we find out that he killed himself and the whole family's coming back from the funeral. And shit falls apart really quick, and that was a tough scene for me to watch. I don't know.
The whole family yelling at each other.
Yeah, that was raw and real. I don't think I've ever seen death dealt with that well on a TV show before. Like, it was, oh my God, it was tough. Just watching all of them go at each other, Sylvia yelling at Marsha, Marsha yelling at Pete yelling at everybody. It was...
Sylvie yelling at her daughter.
Yeah, we meet Brenda, and she just totally discards her daughter. Okay, so you hate Sylvia, and this is probably a topic for another podcast, but I do kind of sympathize with her journey, too.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
I get why she's so...
It doesn't make her any less of a bitch about it.
No, it doesn't, but I do understand where she's coming from. And she's going through something really tough on top of the death.
And... I really get a strong feeling that she's very manipulative, though. Mm-hmm. And then she talks about her daughter being manipulative, and obviously, where does she get that from?
I don't know if Louis would write a character like that, though. I don't think Louis would write such a villain like that.
No, I don't think she's, like, a villain. I think she's supposed to be understandable, but she's still manipulative.
Could be. I don't know. I just feel like she's out of options. She's on her last rope. She's dying, essentially. I mean, they say that in the show. Oh, man. Poor Sylvia.
Take her. Sylvie. Don't take Alan Alda. Take her.
Poor Mrs. Soprano. And I love Edie Falco. Maybe that's why I relate, because I loved her on Sopranos. Yeah, so that scene was really tough, and at the end, when everybody's dealing with it, the people are talking in the bar about whatever, there's this chick that looks like Carrot Top.
Oh, yeah.
We should mention her. She looks like Carrot Top. There's this other hipster douche who really deserves a douche tax. We gotta hike the douche tax on the that gay asshole. One? Yeah, the gay one.
Excuse me, can you get me another beer?
Mm-hmm.
Can you make it taste any more like piss?
Yes. He gets in a fight with Tom.
Yeah, he's annoying.
Yeah. Bunch of assholes. And by the end of it, when they're talking about suicide, Buscemi comes to this conclusion.
Buscemi had a great line.
Yeah. So they're talking about suicide and how babies are killing themselves. And why doesn't everybody just kill themselves right now?
He said, because maybe it gets better. Right?
Yeah. And that was the episode. And I got to tell you, kind of an uplifting
That's not the uplifting part I was talking about.
No, that's so not the uplifting part.
Oh, I thought that's
what I think was. I'm with you.
We're talking about the optimistic plan that Horace has laid out.
Well,
okay. It leaves an optimistic potential turn of events.
I don't think it's going that way.
I don't necessarily think either.
I think something's going to happen and it's all going to go to hell, but the idea is...
It's an uplifting moment in the show.
And it's one that you
it gives
truly
us hope.
Want to happen.
It gives us hope that this is maybe going to be turned around. I don't think it's going to go that way.
I don't think so.
But that, regardless of that, regardless of my outside knowledge, if I was just a regular viewer watching this, I would think this is an uplifting moment.
Okay.
So Horace has laid out a plan of attack now that, so to speak, Pete is out of the picture.
Mm. Oh.
Quite frankly, this wouldn't have worked otherwise, but...
Sure.
Well, yeah, and that's what I said earlier. If he hadn't...
Yeah, you did say
If he hadn't committed suicide, we wouldn't have ended on such a high note.
Right.
in the first act.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, Zach, you want to discuss the plan of attack?
So Sylvie has been trying to sell the bar and the building because in New York they try to build vertically and all this stuff. So she says, you know, I know a guy who's willing to pay $6 million for this building.
Split it 50-50.
Yeah, split it between Sylvie and Horace and leave just Pete out of it. After a while, Horace says, hey, let's sit down. I'm talking to Buscemi and Sylvie. And they come and sit down and he says, Sylvie, you're broke. You can't afford to pay anything. So you live here. We can look after you, help out at the bar, fix the bar up, and then sell it. That way, you know, we'll all have money.
I think he's saying, don't sell it.
Yeah.
I think he's saying you move in and make the bar
profitable. Yeah.
Profitable.
Yeah.
With us.
And then we'll be set. Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're not ever selling it.
He's saying that if she...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm thinking about how he got there, which... Okay.
Yeah, they were going to sell it, split it three ways, eventually each of them getting $2 million, and Horace said, what if we could still have a decent chunk of money that would pay for your treatments, but also keep the tradition of this place alive?
Yeah, you're right.
And here's Buscemi fighting for one side, essentially fighting on behalf of his father, and here's Sylvia pulling him the other way, and here's Horace in the middle, and we're back to where we started. There seems to be a compromise. I don't think it's going that way. I just have a feeling that the show is a lot more tragic than that. And this is no insider info or any spoilers or anything. It just seems like this is not a show where happy things happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was certainly an uplifting note, and I really liked Buscemi's line there. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a nice touching moment.
It was a great line.
After we watched abusive family members just laying into each other for the last hour. Yeah. But yeah, who knows where it's going to go? I have no idea. We're on to Act 2 now, I guess, which is the last 5 episodes.
I didn't know that was the plan. That was Louis' plan for this whole thing. But.
Sure. The show has been done now for a couple weeks. It's really good. I'm enjoying it a lot so far.
Oh, look, it's very good.
And I have no idea where it's going. But
it's
been fun. It's been real. So we're going to be doubling up on these a lot more.
I think we're probably going to double up once more, actually.
Okay.
Just based on looking at the lineup.
All right. So, yeah, because some are shorter, some are longer than others.
They're all varying lengths.
Yeah.
So I imagine...
Yeah, there's no consistency in length of episodes.
I imagine the way it's going to go...
So 4 left?
Yes. Four podcasts left.
4 podcasts left.
Five episodes, yes.
So keep up with us. If you've watched the whole thing, go for it. I don't care. But we'll be taking breaks, too. We're going to have some more fun stuff happening over the next couple weeks.
Yep.
Non-Horace and Pete related.
Yeah.
And summer's here, so maybe more in-depth podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely.
More time spent on things, more creative ideas.
Might got to switch the day around, but we'll talk about that.
Good plan. Great. That actually sounds fantastic. All right. Great. Quick little note for you guys. Nico Empire is going through a trillion different things right now, and I'm making changes, and it's all going to be great, and Nick's helping me. Right, Nick?
Yeah.
And it's going to be great designs, like the pattern on that t-shirt.
Thank you.
Or that button down. And it's going to be fantastic. And problem is that the feed should still be working. And if you're subscribed on iTunes or whatever, you'll still get the episodes coming in. But if you're going to the site, it's going to look different, but everything will be up there. It'll all be in line. Just bear with me for the next couple weeks. Amazon, I don't think, works for the time being. You can't do your Amazon shopping this week. Next week you'll be able to do that. The banner will be up and all that. So bear with me. NicoDiGregorio.com, NicoEmpire.com will take you to different places, but it'll all bring you to the same place pretty soon, probably by the end of the week. So, and Nico Show will be back as well, and everything will be up and running. It's the summer of the Nico Empire, you guys. You ready for it?
Exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yes.
Why is this a thing? It's going to new heights.
I think it will.
That's right.
I think if we keep it up.
We're going to
we're going to start recording in the kitchen.
Eventually we moved to the second floor.
Oh wow.
And the roof.
Where we were for a couple episodes.
Yeah, we did that a couple times.
We're gonna reach 52 listeners.
Oh, that's sad.
Alright. Fuck you. You've all been naughty, guys.
No.
Sometimes I wonder, do we tear ourselves to pieces? I just need some time to think, or maybe I just